This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. A few years ago, when I was still a relatively new father, I briefly brought my son to my workplace. And one of my colleagues, Tracy, said something that was new to me and struck me as profound. Talking about parenting, she said, "The days are long, but the years are short." The idea, for those who have not been parents, is that while the hour-by-hour and day-by-day work of being a parent can be frustrating and exhausting, time flies, so appreciate your kids while they're young, because before you know it, they'll be grown up and gone. My next guest today, Andrew Bombeck, has adapted that phrase for the title of his latest book, Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. Bombeck is a physician and professor at Columbia University in New York. He specializes in rare kidney disorders, and he's careful to say he's not a parenting expert. Quite the opposite, in fact, and that's just what qualifies him to write this book. Like me, and perhaps you, Bombeck is a modern parent, at times anxious, busy, and exhausted, but also eager to do right by his children. Long Days, Short Years traces how parent went from being a noun to a verb, and in so doing, became a competitive sport. It also offers an alternative way to think about those short years. Andrew Bombeck joins me now. Andy, welcome to The 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So what changed parent from something one is into something one does?
I think the transformation occurred about 30 or 40 years ago when parents started to approach the job of raising kids as a skill that could potentially be mastered. And this idea that if you work at it, you can achieve some version of perfection. And what that perfection is has also evolved in terms of parents trying to raise these cultivated children that have the most ideal resumes and are so optimally prepared for college and beyond. And so I think it's sort of emblematic of the pressures that parents face that we're now thinking of parenting as something that you are required to work at, a skill that requires practice and honing rather than simply a privileged position to be, which is where you would like to think of yourself as a parent, a role that you were born to play rather than something that you actually are not good at and have to work at. So the use of parent as a verb to me really signifies the anxiety that parents feel today.
Yeah, and you write about your own journey to, I don't know, how would you say it, taking a more deliberate, evidence-based approach to parenting and how it sort of parallels how you had to sort of craft a bedside persona as a physician. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So in the book, what I discuss is that I think there are people who were born to be doctors and there are people who were born to be parents and just have this really instinctual nature, whether it's taking care of other people or raising kids, where they just are always doing the right thing. And very often that boils down to just always showing respectful behavior towards whomever they're caring for, whether it's a physician caring for a patient or a parent caring for a child. But for many of us, and this is a group that I include myself in, we sometimes trip over our general instincts to be caring because we have so many other things on our mind. And to actually do the appropriate work, whether it's being a great doctor in my profession or being a really good parent in terms of caring for and loving and respecting my kids, is something that, at least for me, did require some thought and process and study and something that I was able to improve upon. And part of the way I was able to improve upon my own parenting was just generally getting a better understanding of all of the phenomenons and all of the pressures that are currently circling around parents right now.
Well, let's talk about some of those phenomena, some of those pressures and those factors that went into making parenting a competitive sport. And let's start with anxiety. You trace this back to the Puritans.
Right. So, I mean, the general theory that I, you know, promote in the book is that parents are usually anxious about things that they feel they have an ability to potentially control. So if you look at the Puritans, their children were dying of infections and they really did not know how to control infections. So instead, they focused on sin and morality as something that they would try to control. And if you move it now to to, you know, modern parents, it, the biggest fear that modern parents seem to be facing is that our children are inheriting a world that's less stable and less guaranteed than the ones that we were brought up in. And that includes a dwindling economic pool. It also includes, you know, a world that's being affected massively by climate change, a world that's being, you know, ravaged by social injustices. And so our kids are potentially looking at a dimmer future than what we hoped for them. And so how do we respond to those fears is to try to control what we think we can control. And the default for parents today is to say, well, I'm going to make sure that my kids get into the best college and then are able to get the best job and have the most financially secure adulthood so that they can potentially survive this world that does look a little bit grimmer in the future. And that anxiety to sort of say, if I don't get my kids prepared for this, I failed them, I think is what plagues so much of modern parenting and makes it, for many, not as happy an experience as it should be.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that, the serenity prayer, right? Grant me the serenity to change the thing, or to accept the things I cannot change, and a raft of parenting books to change the things I can. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Andrew Bomback, the author of Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. If you want to join our conversation, maybe some of this resonates with you. Maybe you are an anxious modern parent who fusses over the things you can control, what your child eats, how they sleep, screen time. There's so much to think about and talk about. 800-222-9455 is the number to join us today. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. You know, you start early in the book and you do acknowledge your privilege, as they say, right? I wonder if this anxiety you're talking about, is that a luxury of affluence?
I do think in part it is. And I think a lot of the parenting phenomenons that I discuss in the book, as I acknowledge very early, are unique to parents of privilege. You know, I use the example of something called free range parenting, which has been a bit of a pushback against helicopter parenting. And what free range parenting espouses is this idea that we should be giving our kids much more independence than we're giving them. And that if we give our kids that sort of freedom, they will be happier and parents in turn will be happier. And all that sounds incredibly good. And it's hard to say there would be any flaws in that sort of philosophy. But if you look closer, you know, free range parenting is almost entirely practiced by white parents and parents, middle class and upper class, economic security. And some of the free range parenting techniques and the independence that parents are bestowing upon their kids, when those same practices are done by parents of color or parents of lower economic backgrounds, those parents are being accused of neglect, whereas free range parents are being lauded for giving their kids independence. So yes, I do feel like there is an issue of privilege that fuels a lot of this parenting anxiety. And again, I call myself out on it very early because it's important when you're writing in this sphere and talking about these concepts to really sort of take a self-reflective view of where your role is in some of these problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you write about that, the acronym WEIRD, which I had remembered reading about, but I had not seen it in a long time. What is it? Western, educated, industrialized, rich, democratic. And that's before you even get into some of the distinctions within, you know, a Western country socioeconomically. Yeah. All right. So one of the, and I should also say, you mentioned free range parenting. We've also spoken with Lenore Skenazy on this show. She's one of the big proponents of that. One of the other phenomena you write about, though, is older parents, right? Parents are older when they're having kids. How does that play into this, you know, focus on evidence-based parenting?
So if you look at families today, in general, the parents are older when they first have kids. And in turn, that means that family sizes are generally smaller than they were in the previous generation. And I think this fuels a lot of the current parenting pressures and anxieties. For starters, the older you are when you first have kids, the more time you have as an adult without kids to compare your childless existence as an adult to your now child rearing existence. And it can be very, you know, striking how much independence you gave up in your adult years once you became a parent. Second, parents who are older tend to have more resources. And so there's sort of this new pressure to say, well, you have everything at your access. There's all these books, all these blogs, all these podcasts, all these shows that you should be able to take advantage of to raise your kids. And you really sort of have no excuse. You waited this time to have a kid. Now do it as best you can. And with smaller family sizes, again, that seems to, again, take away some of the excuses. Well, you know, my parents didn't pay attention to me because I was one of five or six kids. I only have one or two kids. I have to give my child 24 hours a day, 7 days a week attention. So I think the older parents and the fact that people are having their kids at later ages and the family sizes are shrinking has paradoxically taken a job that you would think should be easier. You know, you have more resources and the family size is smaller, but paradoxically has made it much more pressure filled.
I guess it's like a form of status anxiety in parenting.
Yeah. To some degree. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a break. We're talking with Andrew Bomback, who is the author of Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. If any of this resonates with you, and I know it resonates with me, so I know there are more of you out there, we'd love to hear your perspective on this, your experiences. Have you read Baby Wise? Have you read The Happiest Kid on the Block? What are some of your parenting experiences in trying to, you know, have you taken this sort of rigorous approach, reading books, listening to podcasts, watching videos, maybe going to seminars to learn about the way to optimize your parenting? Do you also feel that that's sometimes a little nuts as well? We want to hear from you. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More with Andy Bomback when we return. Again, the book is Long Days, Short Years. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking with author Andrew Bomback about his new book, Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us on air today. That's 800-222-9455. And Andy, I want to do something now that I borrow from the economist and podcast host Tyler Cowen, and that's a segment called Underrated or Overrated. I'm going to throw a name or topic out there, ask you if you think they are underrated or overrated and why. All right, so first, letting children cry themselves to sleep.
Oh, for me, that's definitely underrated. I sleep trained my own kids, and this was out of necessity because my wife and I both have extremely hard hours that we follow as physicians. So we needed our own sleep, and so we sleep trained our kids, which requires letting them cry it out, and it worked for us. So I think that's underrated. But one of the things that's interesting about, you know, if you're looking for parenting advice, you can find advice that'll tell you to let them cry it out, and you'll find advice that will tell you you should never let them cry it out. And I think that's one thing that's so interesting about the parenting advice industry is you can sort of find the resource you want to find if you look hard enough.
Yeah, definitely. I am definitely on team cry it out as well. It was a godsend for my wife and I. Screen time as primarily bad for kids, underrated or overrated?
I think that's actually properly rated.
Sure, that's fair.
I think I think it's very clear the less screen time you're able to give your kids, the better. However, as parents, we need it. So, I mean, the screen is in many ways an electronic babysitter. And so I think it's an ideal that can never be met, to say you're never going to let your kids be on screens. And to many, in many ways, they need to learn how to use screens appropriately. So I think, the charge for parents today is to figure out, how do I get my kids to use screens in a way that's not maladaptive, in a way that will sort of prepare them to use it in a healthy way once they're not being monitored by mom and dad.
Absolutely, yeah.
Sort of a necessary evil.
Yeah, right. And that was actually going to be my next one, is screen time as an escape valve for parents. But I think you covered that. Sandra Boynton books, underrated or overrated?
I've got to say, for me, again, this is personal, very underrated. I read, a bunch of Sandra Boynton books to my kids growing up, but these were all the Spanish translations. We raised our kids bilingually.
Because now who's bragging, right?
My wife's family is from Mexico, so I didn't speak really much Spanish when my kids were born, but I've learned Spanish along with them. And the Sandra Boynton books were one of the ways that I learned Spanish, by reading her books. Because and I always recommend, if you want to learn a foreign language, just pretend you're a baby and just start reading the literature from infant books all the way up to, chapter books as a young adult. That's a great way to learn a language. So I learned some of the basics of Spanish through Sandra Boynton books. Like I can recite Buenas Noches a Todos, which is, one of her books. I can recite it like a poem from memory, how many times I read it in Spanish. So I love her. Yeah. And Snuggle Puppy, which we didn't have in Spanish. We only had Snuggle Puppy in English, is still like a book that I made up a tune to it. And I'm sure all parents have their own tunes to it. So very special books.
Yeah. The Sun Has Set Not Long Ago, Now Everybody Goes Below is one that's burned into my own memories. But personally, I'm a little more partial to Bob Stack's books. All right. Last thing I want to ask you about, underrated or overrated, memorizing dialogue for conversations with kids.
Okay, so this is a very controversial field that I discuss in the book. And I think this is underrated, especially if you're a parent like me who is worried about how you're doing the job. So there's a bunch of parenting books that are out now, exemplified by the book called Now Say This, which basically say, if you're feeling uncomfortable as a parent, here are some dialogues to memorize. And the dialogues are generally expressions of empathy and setting limits and problem solving, but they're really well chosen phrases that are meant to show respect to the way kids are feeling. And I find myself relying on these rehearsed dialogues all the time. Now, one way I would sort of say they can be overrated is if that's all you're doing. You can't be robotic about it, because your kids will wise up to this. If your kids are so much more intelligent and clever and intuitive than we sometimes give them credit for. If you're using canned phrases all the time, eventually they're going to say, I get it. It must be hard to do this. So you have to make sure that you
got to pass the Turing test, right?
You got to make sure you add a little bit of your own spice to the dialogue. But using pre-canned dialogues, in my experience, have been very helpful.
Well, that is one thing I have not tried, so maybe I'm going to look into that after reading your book. All right, let's go to the phones, 800-222-9455. We are talking with Andrew Bomback, author of Long Days, Short Years. Jill from Champaign is on line one. Jill, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I understand you have, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the conversation. My interest was piqued when you were talking about free-range parenting and whether to read books or not to read books. We have four kids. My oldest is about to turn 11, and then 8, 5, and 15 months. And we homeschool, so I'm with them all the time.
Oh, wow.
And so, I'm one of those people who definitely is constantly like reading the latest books and listening to the latest podcasts and trying to find out like what is the latest research about how to raise our kids, because I feel like if there are people out there doing this research, I want to know what it is so that I can hopefully raise my kids to have an even better life and experience than I have had, which I've had a pretty great life. My parents were awesome, but I would love to be able to offer my kids the type of child rearing that would make them the most successful people that they can be.
All right, Jill, thanks so much for sharing your perspective. Yeah, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, yeah, thanks, Jill. So first of all, that's a very, you know, hard challenge that you have facing you with four kids that you're basically homeschooling, but it sounds like you're doing a great job. The thing about parenting resources, whether it's advice books or blogs or podcasts, there's too many out there. It is impossible for a parent to be able to consume all of them and to actually use all of this advice. So what I recommend in the book is that there's a parallel between what we call precision medicine in the world of doctoring and what I call in the book precision parenting. And the idea is the same. In medicine, we have a deluge of information. We have, you know, all these CAT scans and MRIs and lab results, and now we have genetic readouts on our patients. And there's so much data that your job as a physician is to look at the patient that in your clinic and know your patient well enough to say, these results are applicable to you and these results are not. And it's the same thing with kids. It starts with just getting to know your child as deeply as possible. In the book, I say, you know everything you can about your child, favorite color, favorite food, favorite movie, favorite show, best friend last week, best friend this week, who's going to be the best friend next week, teachers who are mean, teachers who are nice, and the list can go on and on. But the more you know your child in and out, the more you can take a parenting resource and say, this is going to work for my child or this is not going to work for my child. So if I go on a mommy blog, for example, and I'm looking for restaurant recommendations for kids in a city that we're going to travel to, and it says something about, this place is very loud, already I can say this is not going to work for my family. Or if it says that this hotel allows pets, I'll say, you know what? That's going to work fine for my family. So this idea that you can sort of pick and choose from resources and tailor it to the actual kids in your family, I think can be very empowering for parents. One of the sort of most disturbing things as a parent, at least for me, is reading parenting advice books where they make the advice seem so simple. And then I'm reading it and I'm saying to myself, this seems like it's like a script for a play that could never be staged in my house. Like everything that's being said here would never occur in my house. And so I think you have to feel powerful enough as a parent to say, this is not going to work for my family, and move on to the next resource, because there are plenty of other resources to use. So it's sort of like a pick and choose which one's going to work for the family that you're raising.
And it's freeing to know that if there is contradictory information, well, just pick one and take that path. And then, you know, you haven't failed if you've, you know, ignored the other path. All right, let's get another caller in. Steve is on line 4 from Chicago. Steve, thanks for calling.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you. Enjoying the show quite a bit. I guess I have a perspective maybe on the other side of it. I'm 67. I didn't get married till I was 30, and my wife and I didn't start our family for 10 years. So my first daughter, I was 40 years old when I had her. And just to reiterate, it's really a whole different experience, resources and everything else, where you can enjoy the experience as of being a parent, as opposed to, let's say, you know, 18 or 22, and all of a sudden you're married and you have a child and you don't know how to pay the light bill. And that does happen, and everybody's experience is unique and different. But mine was completely enjoyable. I would say this, I would agree 110,000% that I don't know where the time goes. Suddenly you look up and, you know, I'm 67 and, you know, it's getting about ready to turn the lights out here. And I'm like, how did that happen? You know, how did that happen? I was chasing around the house trying to put a diaper on her yesterday, and here, you know, she's singing opera, literally, in Philadelphia.
Wow.
But I would say the scariest thing, personally, is I'm glad we had them when we had them, because having young kids now with the internet, I would think would be just totally terrifying. And sure. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you so much.
Steve, thanks so much for the call. And yeah, maybe the internet's probably a conversation for another show and another day. But yeah, I don't know if you have any reaction to that.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, the first question I would ask Steve is, now looking back, it was such a happy time raising the child. But did you feel that way when you were immersed in the moment? I would hope yes, because it sounded like it was a very positive experience and joyful experience. But he's also from the previous generation. So the parental anxieties and pressures that I'm talking about in the book really sort of reflect the generation after Steve, the ones who are raising kids now. And while I do think a lot of what he says is true, these worries and anxieties are very different than if you have your kids very young and you're worried about, you know, can we literally afford to have a kid? There is some privilege, as we discussed earlier, in not having to worry about can you afford it, but rather, you know, can we optimize it and do we have to optimize it? And that's sort of what I think is unique about the modern parenting struggle, is that this idea that it's not just to survive parenthood, but you're trying to optimize parenthood. And is it really something that should be subject to that sort of scrutiny?
All right, we've only got a couple of minutes left. So the last thing I want to ask you about is this idea that a way to maybe reframe the long days, short year, right, that we started with, the days are long, but the years are short. And that's meant to inspire us to savor the time with our kids, as Steve suggested. But you suggest reframing that maybe as the short years are a reward for the long days. Say more about that. Again, about a minute left.
I think, it's funny because Steve might have just proved that point, but I quote another author, Ada Calhoun, who says in her recent book, you know, older people are generally happier and someday will be old too. And it's this idea that there does seem to be like this light at the end of the tunnel where you say, I'm going to be freed of all this pressure and free of all these responsibilities, and I can go back to that independence I had before I was a parent. Now, I would say that's just one way to interpret it. I personally don't think most parents feel that way. I think most parents are sort of dreading that moment when their kids leave the house. And in many ways, parenting is one of the weirdest relationships, in terms of you're putting all this work into a relationship that success is considered the other person eventually leaves you. And the other person eventually leaves you confidently and happily because they're ready to leave you. And it's that's what, you know, that's what such the conundrum of being a parent is that, you know, you're so invested and eventually it's all over. So I personally think the long days, short years is more the traditional interpretation, which is it's going to be over before you even know it. And you really do want to enjoy the time you have now.
Yeah.
But there definitely is this alternative where you can say, okay, it's really hard now, but it's going to be over soon. So just bear with it and you'll get through it.
Yeah. You want to hear your kids say, it's not you, it's me. I'm self-actualized and healthy. So goodbye. All right. Andrew Bomback is the author of Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. Andy, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Oh, Brian, thanks so much. This was a really fun conversation with you and your listeners.
The 21st Show is produced by Jose Zepeda, Christine Hatfield, and Aiden Choate. Our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. That's it for us this week. We'll be back on Monday. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.